podcast is called Okay Stupid.
Welcome to Okay Stupid. The only podcast in Brooklyn that knows where the clitoris is.
We're about to.
Well, by the end of this episode, we all will.
Yeah, couldn't pick it out of a diagram. Couldn't point to it on my own damn body.
Couldn't pick it out of a hat.
I am not sure I know how to pronounce clitoris.
Well, good thing we have an expert on deck here.
Sexpert.
We have a sexpert here to give us a talk on sex ed, who we're just going to bring in right from the beginning. And we're so happy to have her here. She's a medical student who will someday be teaching the whole world about sex. So you saw her here first. She's one of my best friends in the whole entire world. Future doctor, Katrina Rapp.
Welcome. Thanks for having me, everyone.
Thanks for coming. Coming, right? We'll see if we can. Hopefully.
That's what I'll be saying eventually after this talk.
Thanks for coming.
So what's up, Katrina? Where are you? What's going on? How's life?
Life is good. I started medical school a few months ago. You know, my brain just getting bigger by the week. And
I see that.
Yeah, I know. It's like, actually, my school doesn't have much room left.
What's a fibula?
We just had a huge anatomy test. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your fibula is in your leg.
Oh, cool.
I was
going to
say, mm-hmm.
Next to your tibia.
Oh,
uh-huh. My mom played field hockey in college, actually, Division I athlete, sort of explains a lot. She was playing one time, and this woman, this is not about fibulas, but it's about a different bone. She was playing field hockey, and this woman,
speaking of
bone, broke her femur on my mom.
Oh my god,
which is the biggest bone in your body.
God,
how did she break it on?
They like fell on each other, and so like, the femur is this one. Fucking thigh bone.
That sounds more intimate than sex.
What did she collide with? I feel like, what is hard enough on your body?
I think it was like a leverage thing. Like she fell, and then it was like,
oh
yeah.
I hope to never break a bone like that.
Yeah. Dude, I broke my humerus, which is the second biggest bone.
And that's why you're so funny.
And that's why I'm so twisted.
Yeah. He's fucked up.
So you're in Portland, right?
I'm in Portland.
Has the smoke disappeared yet?
The smoke has passed. Yes.
That's great.
We've got clear skies here right now.
No one in New York knows anything about what's happening on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Even though all of our families are there.
Yeah. Portland is unlucky right now. We've got, you know, terrorists and fires and, you know, all that good stuff all at once.
Yeah. They're standing back and standing by.
Mm-hmm.
They're standing by. How horrifying is that?
Yeah. I wonder if by the time this episode comes out, Trump will be dead.
Oh.
Well, that'd be awesome.
He's having emergency
treatment. We
definitely
don't hope that.
I don't want him to die.
Emergency or experimental?
No, there was like something
a
that they use
today?
only like they, it's really recommended not to use it unless the case is really extreme.
Dude.
Yeah, they just put him on some steroids too.
Yeah.
Oh shit. And as a med student, what is your professional opinion of this?
I mean, none of the stuff that he's been put on has like any real proven clinical benefit.
Mm. Maybe and let's keep it that way.
Yeah. That's how I'm feeling.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Donnie, the miracle kid.
Well, I read a really interesting part of our favorite book, Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, that I would love to briefly talk about before we get started with our lovely presentation, because I thought it was really interesting. Okay, here's what it is. So we all know that, you know, society links some part of shame with sex in most children and like families.
Yeah. Heard of it.
But she really breaks it down in an interesting way where there's like, in terms of society and culture, there's six groups of social norms, like six different ways you can break down like what's expected of society. And one of the sections is disgust, like you have shared disgust with your, you know, there's like love or like friendship, but one of them is disgust. And disgust is really important evolutionarily, because if you're disgusted by something, that's how you don't get sick from it. So you're disgusted by corpses, you're disgusted by like poisonous things, mm-hmm. or
rotten food.
Yeah, rotten food. It's like stuff that is dangerous. But oftentimes as kids, what we're like when sex comes up, or like when little kids are caught masturbating or whatever, the expression that the parent makes is disgust. And so whatever sexual arousal you feel, you associate with disgust. And that's also true for like infants won't touch certain toys if their parents make disgusted faces at them. Like it's very intuitive that like disgusted expressions are like really sink in your brain very quickly. And so a lot of people then, like, because they know that it's something disgusting, then like arousal becomes associated with a feeling of disgust, which is kind of, you know, an obvious statement at the end of the day, but it also like really breaks it down in an interesting way. And for me, that really explained, like, I definitely have that sometimes when I'm like turned on, I'm like, ew, stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was like, think about someone masturbating. Like, is that disgusting to you? Like, well, that's probably why.
Well, it is the man we saw in the park yesterday was blatantly masturbating.
Well, yeah. Do you want to tell the story of that?
Well, I think...
Have you been?
He saw it.
I saw it. Yeah, I
picked
it out.
It first. He was our safety king.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to another friend of the pod, Natalie Price, and she was telling like a story that was truly very captivating. And I say that because the only thing I think that could have drawn me away from the story is what I saw, which is this out of the corner of her eye was a Hasidic Jewish man just really rubbing his dick. Like it in his
Was it thing, out?
His dick wasn't out. He was kind of going like in and out of his pants really quickly, like hand out where you could see it, hand in his pants.
It was packed. The park was packed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he was standing right by my birthday party, looking at my birthday party attendees. No, I mean, sorry for having cute female friends.
Yeah, right. Like,
and he was also holding a handkerchief over his face in his other hand, which was another really strange detail.
Well, yeah, and then our other friends of the pod, the twins Meshki, started screaming at him, stop it, stop.
He's standing right behind him and
bolted like a cartoon villain, like yeah. Scooby-Doo fucking guy, and he just ran
and crazy. He looked over his shoulder
and that folks Hold that's on. Shame
that's shame and, also, and that man
wow.
and we shouldn't have done that. We should have
yeah.
And said that's beautiful.
Actually, let me help you out, there's a better technique.
That guy's not going to be able to masturbate for like 5 years.
Exactly.
He really ruined it for him.
He can't in his house for some reason.
And yeah. You know what Natalie said that I actually thought was like so funny and true was she was like, he's going to go home and jerk off to how disgusted we were. Like that's what gets him off. You don't masturbate in a park because you masturbate in a park because you are turned on by people being disgusted by it.
Interesting.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a huge twist on what I said that I cannot even begin to wrap my mind around.
We're going to have to take a week and come back on that next. Yeah.
Okay, anyway. But in chapter 9 of the book, I'll learn how to undisgust. So,
yeah, I mean, nice. That's definitely
nice.
I'm not there yet, but someday.
Like, disgust and shame are sort of interchangeable, maybe?
Yeah, I think this? So.
Yeah.
When you do something disgusting, that's shameful. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
it makes me think of like, you know, girls have cooties.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
At the core of that is the sort of this idea that like,
sex is gross.
Yeah. Like somebody you could be sexually attracted
yeah,
to.
Yeah. Kissing is gross.
Like disgusting.
Yeah. Totally. Totally.
I feel like a lot of men that I've talked to are disgusted with themselves about masturbating.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally.
I feel like I hear it like maybe, like the women that I talk to may not masturbate as much, but I feel like I don't hear as much about them being disgusted with themselves.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe.
Here comes a big dog.
Yeah. I wonder why.
I've read.
What's your theory on that?
I honestly think that it might have to do with men, like people with penises masturbating, like it is just more messy. Like,
yeah.
There's more fluid that gets all over the place.
Sploosh.
There's a sploosh. Okay, but I will say that it is, on the other hand, it's surprising because like in popular culture, there's so much about men masturbating that would make men feel more comfortable like doing that themselves. Whereas women, I feel like you so rarely see a woman masturbating in like a movie or a TV show.
Yeah. And a lot of women.
And I feel like, I was just going to say, I feel like that's why like Big Mouth and Pen 15 have been like, have been so explosive, is because it's like the first time that, or one of a big pop culture emergence that features like teenage girls being horny. And I recently watched Dirty Dancing again. And that is a great movie that showcases female horniness. Like, you gotta rewatch.
Yeah, I also feel like there's more of a depiction of like women masturbating as being really like a sexy performance. Like people would watch, like people talk about women masturbating as like a really hot thing, and that's not how people talk about male masturbation.
And like male masturbation as like a violation of boundaries.
Yeah.
Like people, like, I mean, we were joking about like this Hasidic Jewish guy, right? But it's like that, you hear about shit like that, or like Louis C.K. or like fucking, what's his name, Matt Lauer. Like there is a whole like predatory thing around, you know, showing male genitalia, masturbating, you know, whatever it is.
Right, like flashers and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I guess there's also a, like one pretty straightforward way for men to masturbate, but with women, and that's why I'm so glad you're here to help demystify the vagina. Like there's so many different ways, and a lot of us don't even know all the ways, and it's just a much more murky picture. I don't know. Yeah, it's a, the media representation, it's like us not really even knowing how our own vaginas work,
and totally
the shame of it too.
And with that, do you want to give us a little lesson?
Sure. Okay, so
wait, can we set the scene? What are you about to teach us? And how did you come to learn all of this information?
Okay, yeah. So, okay, I guess to go way back, when I was in high school and just becoming sexually active, I was like so pissed that I couldn't orgasm and really, really wanted to. And like every once in a while, like one of my friends would have an orgasm and I was like, how did you have it? And they were like, I don't know, it just happened. And like, during sex with a partner, and you know, I was having sex, but never having orgasms. And so one of my friends bought me a vibrator, like this little blue dolphin vibrator.
Oh my God.
And
its body was a dolphin.
What?
Its body was like a dolphin.
Yeah. No, the little vibrator was its little dolphin nose. And because she knew I was like so sexually frustrated. And so I like, you know, set the mood in my room and like lit candles. And I was like, you know, I have to like channel it this in my whole body, because like women, it's impossible for women to have orgasms. Like I need to like be in this zen state in order to like achieve this. And then I put this vibrator on like my urethra for 2 hours and did this like 2 consecutive nights until my vibrator died completely. And like, did it ever feel a thing? Like there was nothing felt good. There was no stimulation. And only after the fact did I like Google what of like the parts of the vagina and learned where my clitoris was, which was actually not inside my vagina. Turns out. And so then I learned how to masturbate. I like finally, you know, had success, and that felt like a huge and went to college, and like similarly, none of my female friends knew how to masturbate or had like not tried. And so then like I just started teaching them, and then I got this job on campus as a peer health educator, and we got like paid to put on these health programs. And so I made this program called Clitoracy, which is like, it was just about, you know, the physiology of female pleasure and like how to orgasm. And I would get like a budget, so I would be able to like give away free vibrators and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Dolphins for everyone.
Dolphins for everyone, exactly. And hopefully people didn't waste the batteries so much because they knew where the clit was, you know.
Go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
I was going to say two things. One, did any people who identified as men or people with penises show up at these events?
So the first one that I did, I made it for like people with vaginas only because I wanted it to feel like I just wanted to make sure that no one was coming kind of as a joke, you know, and I wanted the people that came to feel like comfortable asking questions. But then a lot of men expressed to me that they wanted to come and they wanted to learn. And so then I opened it up and I did a few more. And yeah, dudes were super receptive. Like their jaws were on the floor. They were like so curious to know how it all works. And so it was like, it was actually a really like nice, like reassuring thing for me as like a college student about, you know, men in general. So yeah.
And the other little story I want to share is that I know somebody who went to the college you went to and was younger than you and actually attended one of these.
Oh,
and,
nice.
took an edible before.
No.
And got like unbelievably high for one of these presentations and raffled to win the vibrator. And had like such a vivid memory of standing outside of, or like up in front of everybody, like fucking blitzed out of their mind, like receiving a vibrator from you.
That's really awesome. I love that.
I hope it was put to good use.
Yeah.
That makes me happy. Yeah, cool. No, it was awesome though, because also like women would come up to me afterward and be like, I've been hooking up with this dude who like doesn't give a shit about like me or my pleasure. And like, I just dumped him because I went to your talk. And I was like, hell yes, let's go. And yeah, so it was good. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, I would love to share a little bit with your listeners.
Yeah, well, please do. And let us know how we can be helpful.
Okay, I guess the biggest things that I feel like were kind of like revelations for me and people that I've talked to, because I feel like especially people, like for people that don't have vaginas, it can, sorry, like the clit can just kind of seem like a totally overwhelming, like mysterious thing that, you know, people don't know how it works. And so they get overwhelmed by it and then like, don't even try to mess with it because they're scared of doing something wrong. And like the clit and the penis are like homologous to one another, like actually in development, the penis grows out from what originally is a clit. Like if you look at the structure of the two, they're almost identical.
That's right, son.
So like I found that it was helpful, like when talking to people who have penises, like to kind of put that into people's brains that like the clit is also just erectile tissue and like it's sensitive in the same ways. And like, it's, you can't think of it so much as other, you know? And so, yeah, if you look at my little drawing, and sorry to your listeners, but
we'll describe it.
We'll post okay. it on our Instagram or something too.
Oh yeah.
Okay, send cool. us a pic.
Yeah. Smile.
So,
yeah.
So basically, you have the head of the clitoris, which is like what you see. That's the only part that's external. But actually, most of the clit is internal.
That's crazy.
It's much bigger. So like over 3/4 of the clit is actually inside.
Wow.
And so this, and so, okay, sorry, I'm going to be all over the place, but a G-spot orgasm is actually just like stimulation of these internal components of the clit from inside, or like people who, people with vaginas who have orgasms through anal sex, it's usually just stimulation of this larger part of the clit, which I don't know if a lot of people know that.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like a convergence of like really sensitive, like erectile tissues inside of your vagina. And that's a G-spot orgasm.
Working in concert.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so basically, so you have this thing called the corpus cavernosum, and that's like the body of the clit. And as you become aroused, like these erectile tissues, everything becomes engorged with blood, just like a penis. And the corpus cavernosum kind of squeezes down, and these, your two vestibular bulbs, like swell up with blood. And as they swell up with blood, that like narrows the vaginal canal and also lengthens it. So that's like how, you know, if you feel your vagina when you're not aroused, you know, it's not that deep, but then you're like, how does a jumbo ding dong fit in there, right? And that's because when you're aroused, your cervix actually gets like pushed back up, and these vestibular bulbs push your vulva forward.
Just like anatomically, are the vestibular bulbs behind like the labia?
Yes. Yes, they're behind the labia majora. And
hypothetically, does that mean that the more aroused a vagina is, the tighter it's going to be?
Bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so it will be tighter. Okay. I know. So this is the thing, tighter but longer, which, you know, and I don't know, like, I've had this experience before. I don't know about you ladies, but like, have you ever felt like your vagina just like, you know, you're just done having sex and it like kicks out the dick?
Yes.
Yeah. You know that feeling?
Yeah.
That's spits just it like out. You're not aroused anymore. And like, yeah. Yeah. Like your stuff kind of shuts up.
Yeah.
So yeah, when you're aroused, it all kind of like, it lengthens but tightens. Oh. And so then when you, and this is also why, like, I think it's really important for female bodied people to be aroused before they start having penetrative sex. Because like, just, well, first of all, lubrication, and also just like to get those juices flowing. I just feel like it just needs to be done before you start having penetrative sex. And it's actually like, if you're able to have an orgasm before sex, you're more likely to have another orgasm during sex.
Whoa.
Statistically.
Well, also, yeah. I feel like sometimes it, like, if you're not aroused enough, it won't go in really too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also feel like just it's easier to build that arousal before moving into penetrative sex than building arousal during penetrative sex. Hmm. And so like, because actually like vaginal penetration isn't the most like stimulating thing. And so like stimulating other erogenous zones, before having sex, or even like the outside of like the vulva instead of just like inside the vagina, is like a better way to build up the blood in those, you know, vaginal wings.
Sorry, everybody, for the
intermission.
Yeah, sorry for the technical difficulties, but we're back. What were you saying, Katrina?
Something about something.
Sorry, yeah, the info was too hot.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was I saying? Okay, well, something that I kind of skipped over that maybe I would want to, that I want to come back to, is that, okay, so the clitoris is all erectile tissue, so that means that also, and this is why it's important to stimulate the clit before penetrative sex, is because your clit grows in size. Like the part of the clit that is on the outside of your body it will grow in size when it's, you know, filling up with blood when you're turned on. So that means that then when you go to have penetrative sex, like friction and like anything that's stimulating your clit, your clit's already going to be way more sensitive and like more responsive to any touch than onward. Mm-hmm. And that's true for penetrative or non-penetrative sex, you know?
Yeah, your clit's gotta get hard. You gotta get hard
first. Right. Your clit's gotta get hard. Yeah. And like, if you think about someone with a penis trying to have sex, you know, it's really hard to have
with a floppy
sex with a floppy dick.
Floppy jalopy.
So yeah. And also, some people's clits are like the clitoral gland, like the part that is exposed is too sensitive to be touched directly. So, like obviously it just takes getting to know your body or getting to know your partner's body, but a lot of people actually prefer to have their clit stimulated through the clitoral hood, which is like right above. And, so yeah, that's just a little note. Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Totally. I absolutely know what you're talking about. Also, sometimes like if you touch someone's clit and they're not ready for it yet, they laugh.
Yeah, it's like way too like tender.
I've heard. And, you're laughing at me. I'm trying to turn you on.
I have a question. How can you do that with like during sex? Does that make sense?
No.
Like, that makes sense if you're using a hand. Do you have any tips for following that direction during like non-finger?
With
the hood.
Non-finger? So I guess like for me, like if I'm having sex, so I'm one of those people that I don't feel like my clit can be touched directly. I have to touch my clit through my clitoral hood. And so like while I'm having sex, me or my partner will be like rubbing my clit through the hood.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, and also, yeah, like some people, who can handle the more direct stimulation or just like clits vary in size too. So like someone that has a larger clit, might be able to like have a clitoral orgasm from just like the friction of penetration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those lucky people, unfortunately, but a lot of people have been graced with like large clits. Good for them.
Or a boyfriend with a fupa.
Yeah. Or that could work too.
This is making me think, and bear with me, that the testicles are on the wrong side of the penis.
Are the testicles the male clit?
I don't think so, Harry. I don't think I'd want those staring me in the face when I'm having sex.
Wait, what are you-
I'm saying they should be above.
Because then they can hit the clit. They can hit the clit.
Just drag back and forth over
there. Get a couple meat clackers just
yeah, could you
just running knock-knock jokes with the clit.
Yeah, just like bumper cars down there a little bit.
Oh my God.
Okay, so some people prefer the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what do you recommend kind of going down there like an optometrist to be like, do you like this? Or do you like this? And like, flip through the different prescriptions.
Well, I would recommend everyone to experiment with themselves, you know, like figure out how you like to have, like how orgasms happen most naturally for you and what feels good for you. And then sharing that information with your partner. And I think that that is like, you know, it's not like the first time you have sex with someone, you have to like sit them down and spread eagle and be like, let me show you how it's done. But I mean, hey, if you want to, more power to you, obviously. But
now that's
community. I think that like, you know, like giving pointers and or like taking someone's hand and showing them how you stimulate your own clit, and so like trying to get them to mimic what you do. And obviously, like especially with a new partner, it's like, even if you try to show them exactly what you do, like, it just takes, for some people, it takes more time to get comfortable with that. And like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm like way too focused on orgasming when I'm having sex, and I like will get really frustrated, you know, if I'm having a hard time. But also there are, with, even though I'm like putting so much emphasis on like orgasms and stuff, like, you know, there's a lot to sex, and having an orgasm doesn't have to be everything. So that's something I'm trying to remind myself, maybe, but but yeah.
True that. We've been talking about that in other episodes too.
Yeah, like not being so focused on the end goal, but like enjoying your time with someone throughout, not being so focused on like reaching climax that then in turn you're not able to get turned on. Or like, yeah, I think that's really important. And on that note, I remember from when I taught this this class in college, I found this like meme. Wait, let me find it really quick. It says, sorry. It says, it takes 237 muscles to fake an orgasm, but only 15 to say it's a clitoris and it's right here. And I really liked that because, I mean, I think a lot of people fake orgasms, and I've done it for sure-sies in the past. And I feel like when, like, once you fake an orgasm, you're basically like shutting that door for yourself. Like you're deciding for yourself that it's not going to happen. So you make the decision to fake it. And like, not only is that, like, there's no, you know, I mean, everyone can do whatever they want, but I just think that like closing that door on yourself isn't fair. And there's no reason that you, if you're really dead set on orgasming, that you and your partner can't work to make that happen, and like, and then you can end or whatever, you know. So that's just something I like to bring up.
Cool.
True. It's not everything, but also we can always learn more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Is there any other information that you want feel like is important?
Let's think. I mean, okay, in terms of just masturbating, I think it's really important to masturbate because it's like good for your brain in terms of chemicals that are released. You get a release of oxytocin, makes you happier, get some endorphins going. It actually boosts your immune system, which is really important during these COVID times.
I hope Donald is jacking himself bleach. Off.
Yeah, I hope he's just jerking it right now. I'm sure he is. That's what his doctors are telling him.
Someone's
right now.
Jerking it for him.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And like release of stress. It helps people sleep better.
BOPO.
And what'd you say?
BOPO?
What's that?
Beat off, pass out.
Beat off, pass out.
I thought that was buy one.
That's honestly my MO. And it also just like allows for you to have more successful sexual encounters with partners because you know what you like and what you don't like. And like, I totally get that for someone that doesn't masturbate a lot, that it can be frustrating and overwhelming at first. And like you were talking about earlier, Caroline, like there are a lot of like psychological things that you have to get over, especially like depending on how sex was framed for you, like as a young person or especially as a teenager. Like I feel like we all have traumatic sexual experiences from being teenagers, you know, that like are on all ends of the spectrum, you know. But I do think it's like a investment that you're making into like yourself and your sexual partnerships, and I think it's real important.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've actually given ourselves masturbation homework that we're going to discuss on the next Unhinged.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
great advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we want to do.
We're going to try some new techniques, maybe try some toys.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try some toys. Like also for someone that isn't super comfortable with masturbating, like getting a vibrator, like it doesn't have to be a gigantic dildo. Like, it can just be a small, cute little dolphin even, you know, and like, just spend some time with yourself and like, see what like angle and pulses, whatever you like, you know?
Yeah.
And, totally. And then maybe graduate onto the jumbo, like,
yeah.
Have you like seen, I've never tried one, but I've always wanted to, the like the giant, dildo vibrators that then have the extra part that stimulates your clit at the same time.
The ones that have like two prongs.
Yeah. They have two prongs.
I have never tried one, but once I was sleeping in my sister's roommate's bed when she was out of town and I rolled over onto her vibrator and it looked just like that.
That's awesome.
And then I kind of just tucked it right back into the same spot when I made the bed.
Katrina, what are the differences between a tiny vibrator and a giant one? Like, is it just the power of vibration? Do you know that?
Yeah. And like you have, it's like about surface area. And then also like, some people really like clitoral, like external clitoral orgasms, but like I have plenty of friends who really only orgasm from like G-spot orgasms. So like that type of person would probably want one of those bigger vibrating dildos so that they could use it inside the vagina instead of externally. See. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, there's so many different types. There's the one that has like the big marshmallow head, and that's like an external clit stimulator, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there are ones that people like that like just suck on the clit.
yeah. Or I think there's a new really expensive one that just like blows air, like puffs the air your clit.
It's like essential oils on the clit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations of like, just at least anecdotally, positions that like people, you know, have had more success with than others
in terms of like clit stimulation?
Yeah. Or like orgasming. Just, yeah. Sex in general, sex positions that, I guess that allow for clit stimulation or whatever.
My best advice would be to find like the position that you feel most like comfortable and confident and hot in, and then either you or your partner stimulate your clit while in that position. And like, so that can be so variable for each person, but like, obviously, like if you feel insecure in doing doggy style or whatever, like that's probably not the position to try it with. But if that makes you feel super hot, then worth trying, you know?
Yeah.
But in terms of like what people have most success with, I think it can be totally all over the place. Like personally for me, it's easiest for me to like stimulate my own clit doing good old fashioned missionary. But for a lot of other people, a lot of other people.
It's the most famous vision in the world for a reason.
Yeah, I like to like do some fun stuff beforehand, and then I'm like, all right, I'm ready to come. Like, let's do it. a lot of women think, or a lot of people with vaginas think that like being on top is the easiest position to come in because you're like sitting and your clit is like totally open for action. You know what I mean? Mm.
Yeah.
I find that challenging because like as I'm starting to orgasm, like I can't be the one orgasming and like keeping the pace, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
But for me personally, I'm not there yet, but maybe one day. We all have work to do.
Do you have any like interesting recommendations for foreplay? Same question earlier in the cycle. Like what is there besides like, you know, handies and blowies, you know what I mean?
Oh, so much more than handies and blowies.
Handies and blowies.
I think that, and this has been on my mind recently, is like there are so many erogenous zones that every individual is going to have different sensitivities in each erogenous zone. And so like some people... And these are, again, just like things that I feel like you have to mess around with and be like conscious of when it's feeling really good for you. like if you really like getting your nipples played with or sucked on, you know what I mean? Like that the nipples are an intense erogenous zone, especially for female body people. And, or even like, yeah, I think foreplay is just so key. Like finding out like what types of like soft touching turns you on and like where soft touch on your body feels really good. Like sometimes I think that like less is more, especially when you're like entering into a sexual encounter. Like sometimes like suggestions and like soft touch or like breath on different parts of your body is so much more powerful than like finger banging someone, you know what I mean?
Totally. Even just like a nice making out for a while.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
On the neck, the back, like
mm-hmm.
kissing is always good. Never too little kissing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never enough kissing, maybe.
Never too much kissing.
Never too much.
Yeah. Plenty of times there's too little kissing.
What do you feel about eating someone out before penetration?
I think that's great. I think that my only thing with eating out that I think is often skipped is like, again, I think that in order for that to be like the maximum, most pleasurable experience, the clit already has to be pretty stimulated before someone goes down to, you know,
party town.
Right.
Goes down to party town.
Or they start, don't immediately attack the clit.
Right, right. Actually, there's some like Monty Python sketch of where there it's like a sex ed class and it's like this professor, sorry, I'm going to just go into this for a second. This professor and like it's a sex ed class of all men and he like knocks down a bed from the wall and like his wife walks in the room and he's like, all right, boys, like what do I do first? And someone's like suck the clitoris and he's like, no, that's not the first thing you do. Yeah. Like what about kiss? You know, and I thought that was really funny. Because yeah, wait, but what was the question? If going down, but yes, anything stimulating and like building up the momentum before right. something penetrative is gonna like increase lubrication. Increase butt blood flow to the clit and make it like basically the more blood that you can like funnel channel into that direction before having sex, the more likely you're gonna be able to orgasm, you know, because it's like you've already built that up.
Sounds like it's not just about finding the clit, it's also about finding it at the right time.
when she's like ready. building that right. up, you know, over time. And then, oh, I didn't say this earlier, but then when eventually you do have an orgasm, like it's all of that blood that's been like built up and stored into those structures that then get like released in spasms. And that's why like the female orgasm is like cool. Spastic. It's because like that blood is like released back into circulation and like spasms.
Wow.
Yeah. Dude,
this is some med school shit. Yeah.
Is there anything else about the moment of orgasm that's interesting to you?
Something that I think is interesting is like, okay, you know, when you're like building an orgasm and you reach a point yeah,
already,
where you're like, no. Okay, perhaps let's say you're building an orgasm and you reach a point where it's like, you could come, if you can kind of like bring yourself lower than that for a second and try to continue, like take a deep breath and take a step away or something and then continue to build it.
Edging?
Edging. Yes. Then you can make your orgasm way more intense and last way longer.
Wow.
Whoa.
And
then so, once you orgasm once, it's easier to have successive orgasms, right?
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about yes. that.
Oh, and also something I should tell you about is your vagina, the vagina has THC receptors in it.
Yes. So,
You can make like,
what is the womb?
Yeah, you can make like, I've made coconut oil, like basically weed butter, but then you can use that as lube. Don't do this if you're using condoms, because coconut oil will break the integrity of condoms, break down the integrity of condoms. But if you're past that point, it will make your orgasm so much more intense. And like, also just everyone should be using coconut oil when they have sex.
Is because that you're like, pussy's getting stoned?
Your pussy gets stoned. The only thing is you do have to like, you have to like rub it around and put it up there like 30 minutes before you like do anything. Yeah. But hey, that's how much foreplay you should be getting anyway. So
cool.
So it's wait, you
yeah.
Yeah, how do you make it?
Okay, so you decarb the weed in the oven, you know, for like 45 minutes. And then I just make mine the shitty way, but you could do it fancier. I just put all the decarbed weed in with coconut oil and like put it in a jar. Yeah, you could strain it, but
who cares?
And then you put it in a jar, you know, of coconut oil, and then put it in a slow cooker with water for like 6 to 8 hours. And cool. So it like all, you know, melds together. And yeah, I think I would recommend that for sureies.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The girlies are going to make it together.
Yeah. Like I've found that it just makes everything down there feel like much more sensitive, and it does make my orgasms longer and more intense. I don't know about all of you, but oh wait, I forgot I wasn't supposed to talk about this.
Okay, how about this? What have I done with weed and sex that has been good for me?
I've heard that when you do weed and sex together,
allegedly.
I've heard that it makes your orgasms more intense, but sometimes harder to reach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Emily and I have both had trouble combining THC above the belt with sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my head, and then I feel like I get dry vag, you know?
For sure. Dry vag is real.
Cotton mouth and cotton vag.
Yeah, drowsiness. Yeah. Kind of the whole thing is a recipe for disaster. Yeah. But little did I know my pussy could just take it herself.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's a workaround for sure. I think that it makes all of those things, but I think that if you can overcome those things, it does end up being way more intense for someone who's not me personally.
Right.
More
right.
intense. And then also it like, you have to work harder for it, but it's worth the reward.
The payoff. And perhaps that is just edging, is that you have to work at it for longer. And so it does end up being more intense in the end. I'm not sure.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for people who are the partners of somebody on kind of like their orgasm journey, like if you are have a sexual partner who is kind of like either struggling with this or kind of looking to push the envelope in some capacity, what are ways for you to be supportive as a partner? Because I have heard, you know, feedback about when somebody is too wrapped up in somebody else orgasming, that can be kind of pressure in and of itself and actually
for sure
not work. Yeah, what do you think about that?
How do you be a good orgasm ally?
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because
the orgasm.
That is definitely a fine line. Like you can
orgasm ally, dude.
That's very real, because it does suck to feel like you're already like, you know, to feel like you're disappointed in a partner by not being able to come. I guess my advice would be to when you're hooking up with someone, see if they know what feels good, like ask them what feels good for them. And then if they don't know, like just keep checking in, I guess. And I also think it could be cool to like, if they don't know how to, if they aren't super experienced with making themselves with masturbating, asking if they have a vibrator or something that you can use on them would be a cool way to help that happen. But yeah, I think that what you said is really true, is that you don't want to make it seem like you're so wrapped up in them coming that if they don't, you're disappointed. So I think just, yeah, trying to get as much from them about what they know feels good. And that doesn't have to just be with like clitoral stimulation. It can be like any part of the body, like, cause obviously getting them the most turned on as possible is going to help with that later stuff down the line. And on that note, yeah, I would definitely just say like not jumping to being like, how can I touch your clit to make you orgasm? Like not focusing so much on that, but focusing a lot on the other stuff that we were talking about before moving there.
Yeah. I would also say that like, if you can figure out like asking if there's something that they've been wanting to try, like maybe there's an erogenous zone they have not experimented with soft touch in, like it could be anything. It doesn't have to be like something freaky. Mm-hmm. I think all that stuff is good to explore with somebody if they're interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
For all you orgasm allies out there.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to go back to the multiple orgasm thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question.
The one on Franklin. Sorry, ask your question.
My question is, I don't know. I guess like besides edging, is there any way to like maximize your chance of multiple orgasm that you've heard of?
I say just keep going at it.
Yeah. I think that some people, it's easier for some people than others, for sure. I would say like giving yourself a breather for a solid moment or so after the first one, like completely removing touch or like stimulation for a little bit and then going back in and trying to build it back up would be my suggestion. But yeah.
Cool. Well, I have learned a lot.
I've learned so much. I don't even know who I was before this.
Seriously.
Yeah. If any listeners have further questions, feel free to DM us and we can pass them on to our clitoracy expert.
Dude, we got to have you on again too.
Yeah. We can accumulate some more questions. Maybe we can see where in your curriculum it lines up with.
Hell yeah. This has been so fun.
We'll post the diagrams that Katrina shared with us somewhere online so you can see them as you listen.
Yeah.
And if you don't orgasm from this episode, one of us will come over and eat your box.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much. And poon in next week.
Woo. Bye, guys.